It's too bad we don't have two sets of eyes. One for looking outside, another for looking inside. Having one set of eyes looking outside, we get very good at looking at other people and not so good at looking at ourselves. And so when we're unhappy, we see what's wrong with other people and blame our unhappiness on them. This person criticizes me, that person doesn't help me, whatever. And that's why there's so much turmoil in the world. Because they have a very clear idea of what other people should be doing and how they're not doing it. And not a very clear idea about what we should be doing and are not doing it. And John Swart used to like to say that each of us has only one person in the world. That's ourself. In other words, the one person we're responsible for. And as the Buddha said, that you don't go to heaven or go to hell because of other people's actions. It's your own actions. They can take you to heaven, they can take you to hell. So why are you taking yourself to hell? And why are you upset with what other people are doing, which has really nothing to do, really, with you? It's your actions that make all the difference. This is why we meditate, not so we can meld into some sense of oneness with the universe, or to get in touch with the inner spaciousness out of which arises insights that we can implicitly trust. We meditate so we can get really clear about what's going on in the mind in the present moment, what its intentions are, because your intentions are what shape your experience. And there's the input from your past actions, and then your present actions, and the input, the result of that input from your present actions. Those three things are the things you really want to focus on. Now, so the results of your past actions, they're there for you to learn from. If you did something skillfully, remember it. If you did something unskillfully, remember it. That's what mindfulness is for, so you can learn these lessons and apply it. But at the same time, you have to remember you can't go back and change what you did, but you can make choices in the present moment. And so we try to be alert, discerning, focused. So we can really clear about what intentions are there in the mind and how we're following them, what the results are. Because sometimes you can see the results right away. You notice this especially when you work with the breath. Simply focusing on the breath in a certain way, you immediately get certain results. If you focus with too much force, okay, the breath feels uncomfortable, it feels like it's been trapped. If your focus is too vague, you find yourself wandering off. And so you want to really stay focused right here to see what's going on. This is what you really have control over. We're talking today about that teaching about the cycle of karma. There's the intention, and then there's the result of the intention, and then there's your reaction to it. And the reaction can either be skillful or unskillful. There can be a defilement there, and if there's a defilement, then that colors your next action. And if the defilement is really strong, you can start going in a really downward spin. So in the beginning, you want to make sure you're going into an upward spin. You see something coming up, okay, there's pain. Instead of immediately focusing on, well, what did somebody do that made me hurt or made me feel bad? Or made me feel abandoned, or made me feel unwelcome. And turn around and say, well, exactly how am I taking that person's words and turning them into something that's going to cause me to behave in an unskillful way. That's where your real responsibility is. And your ability to turn something negative into something positive, or something positive into something even more positive, that's an important skill. You don't necessarily learn it just by keeping the mind still. You've got to learn how to think. There was one time when John Fuang took a group of people up to the jetty there at Wat Dhammasettit, and someone had scattered garbage all over the area around the jetty, so everybody had to clean it up. The original plan would be to go up and meditate, and then but they found themselves cleaning up the garbage. And so one of the people complained. She said, "Well, how could anybody scatter garbage around the jetty like this? What were they thinking?" And John Fuang said, "Don't complain. If they hadn't scattered the garbage, we wouldn't have a chance to get the merit of cleaning it up." So there you are. There's merit in cleaning up. There's merit in learning how to carry more than your share. There's merit in learning how to put up with criticism and not get upset by it. In other words, learning how to deal skillfully with unpleasant situations. It's an important skill in the path. Because when you think about it, the unpleasantness of living with one another is nothing compared to the unpleasantness of aging, illness, and death. We get so worked up about it. Sometimes here in the monastery it seems even more blatant than outside, because after all, we're all here to practice the Dharma, and yet we see other people are not up to our standards. And as we were saying today, sometimes it's easier to deal with people who are out in the business world because they know that they're not there out of good motives. But when you're dealing with really nice people, say teachers, and you start asking them, "Well, why is your motivation so unskillful?" they get really upset. And yet you see their behavior, and it's just the same as people outside the school, outside the university. But again, that doesn't mean we have to get upset about one another's behavior. Learn how to look inside. Try to develop that gaze that turns around and looks at your actions, looks at your reactions. Because what you're really responsible for is that reaction that may turn into a defilement, which is going to cause unskillful intentions, which keeps the cycle going around in unfortunate ways. At the very least, if you sense a defilement coming up, anger in particular, just make up your mind, you're simply not going to act on that anger. That's like seeing that a wheel is rolling off in a bad direction, or your car is going off in a bad direction. You're able to put a block in the way, so you can at least stop it. That may not solve the problem, but at least to make sure that you're not going further and further down in a downward spiral. Where the real break is made is between the result of one of your actions and then the defilement that arises there. If you can learn how not to have that defilement arise, that's where you really cut the cycle. So those are the two places you want to focus: looking at your reaction to things, and then looking at your intentions, and try to cut all the unskillful connections that there might be there. That requires that you look inside. And so if each of us is looking inside in this way, there are going to be no problems. We can live in harmony. And our presence here is actually a help to the practice. If we're going around looking at one another, there's one useful thing that comes from looking at one another, And that's if you see somebody doing something unskillful, ask yourself, do I have that behavior? Is that one of my habits? Do I act in that way? And when you can see clearly that it's not very good to see in someone else, you say, well, it looks that's, if I do the same sort of thing, it's going to look that bad as well. In other words, you look at other people as you would in a mirror. Because otherwise it's very hard to see where your unskillful habits are and how bad they look. Again, this is the problem. We don't have a set of eyes where we can watch ourselves. So when you see someone else's unskillful behavior, and kind of reflect, okay, do I have that kind of behavior in my repertoire? And if you know that you do, okay, now you've got something to learn from, an area to focus your attention to. And if you don't have that kind of behavior in your repertoire, spread a lot of goodwill to that person, a lot of compassion. Because the implication of a John Suwat's comment that we have only one person we're responsible for, that means that we've got to focus on straightening ourselves out. And our problem is that we're always trying to straighten out everybody else. And as a result, they don't like it. And in the meantime, the work that we should be doing, straightening ourselves out, doesn't get done. The Buddha once said, this is a sign of wisdom, knowing what is your duty and what's not your duty. The fool, he says, neglects his own duty and sticks his nose into the duties of other people. The wise person knows to look at his or her own duty, look after that. And as for other people, you, if it's not your duty, you leave it alone. Now, the principle starts, it's a very simple, everyday kind of principle, but it goes deep into the practice. When you start looking at the suffering in the mind, suffering the body and the mind. There's some things that are your duty that you really do have to look after, and there are other kinds of suffering that you have to let go. You know, the suffering that's, or the stress that's involved in the fact that things simply change, that's part of nature. That's something you can't change. You can slow it down a little bit. But given the way the body is, it's inevitable that it's going to age, it's going to grow ill, it's going to die. That's natural stress. But there's another stress that you're actually responsible for, and that's the one that comes, the kind of stress that comes from craving and ignorance, clinging and ignorance. That whole constellation of things that are actually going on in your mind and that you're actually responsible for. Now, that's something you can do something about. And it turns out that that's the stress that really weighs on the mind. Because if there's not that stress, then the stress of aging, illness, and death doesn't weigh on you at all. So this principle of knowing what's your duty and what's not your duty is not just a simple everyday affair. It's the beginning of the discernment that goes deeper and deeper into the practice. This is a common principle throughout the Buddha's teachings, that what sounds like basic everyday stuff actually has deeper implications in the mind. Like the Buddha's instructions to Rahula about looking at your actions, and if you see if you did something harmful, learn how to stop. Well, that applies to your meditation as well. Learn to look at your meditation as an activity. And even when you get into very refined states of concentration, you find if you're really sensitive, there's an element of stress. Now, it's hard to say it's really harmful at that point, but there is an element of stress, an element of disturbance. And when you can catch yourself doing whatever it is that's causing that disturbance, it's the way you perceive things, the way you focus on things, you learn how to drop that. You can go into deeper states of concentration. So this is why it's so important that you look at yourself, because that way you learn how to look more and more carefully at your own mind. If you're constantly focusing outside, you're going to miss what's happening in your mind, even as you sit and meditate. There'll be that habit to focus outward, to slip off into some theory or slip off into some idea about things, rather than really looking at the mind. Things come up in the mind. Insights arise. And you get carried away by the insight, instead of saying, well, what is the mind doing around that insight? Upasika Ghi has a good set of instructions on this one. She says, any insight that comes up, just watch and see what happens next. What happens next? Don't just go running with the insight without noticing what you're doing around the insight. Because it's only that ability to see that, okay, there's an insight, but here's the mind grabbing onto the insight. A little bit of pride here, a little bit of whatever. Then you can drop that. If you see it, you can drop it. If you don't see it, you can't drop it. This principle of looking at yourself, looking at your actions, is very important. It creates harmony in the community. And it creates a lot of the good habits you're going to need to really work yourself free. Because after all, the goal we're aiming at is something that is not an action, it's not a product of an action. As we know today, when the Buddha described the Four Noble Truths, he talks about suffering and the cause of suffering. But he doesn't talk about the cause of the end of suffering, he talks about the path you follow to get there. Because you can't cause the deathless, but you can practice in a way that goes there. It's your activity, the skillfulness of the mind, that allows you to get there. And so this is where you have to keep watching again and again and again. What are you doing that's unskillful? Even around really refined states of concentration. As the Buddha points out, it is possible to get a state of concentration and your reaction is the wrong one. The pride that you've developed this that other people haven't been able to develop, that comparing mind. What John Mahabua calls the fangs of ignorance. Now it's one thing to have a sense of accomplishment and a sense of being capable, but that little bit of the mind that starts comparing yourself with other people, that spoils the benefits you can be getting out of the concentration. It's like those people who are really good looking, and you know that they're very proud of their good looks, and that pride immediately takes something away from their good looks. So this is why we have to be restrained. Because our eyes keep looking outside, but we keep wanting to turn them back in and notice, okay, what am I saying? What am I doing? What's going on right now? What am I thinking? Because that's where all the interesting work is. And of course, that's the place where the last place we tend to look or want to look. So an important principle in the practice is to turn around, keep looking at yourself, what you're doing, what you're saying, what you're thinking, and looking for the results. Because that's where one of our biggest blind spots is. Yet that's where the end of suffering can be found.